Today on Straight Talk Africa, once again, we have a winner in Kenya, President Uhuru Kenyatta. But is he really the winner? To what extent does this presidential repeat poll reflect the voice and will of the Kenyan people? And why did the majority of registered voters not show up to cast their vote? That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all of our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a conversation about reaction to last week's Kenyan presidential repeat election.
And coming up later, you, our audience, have weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook and Twitter comments. We've gone through them all and we'll reveal some of them. That's just ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
Legal challenges aside, Uhuru Kenyatta was declared Monday winner of the Kenyan presidential repeat election. My colleague, Paul Sisko, has more.
We know Uhuru Kenyatta has been declared the winner in Kenya's repeat poll.
I wish to declare Honorable Uhuru Kenyatta as president-elect and Honorable William Ruto as the deputy president-elect.
That was days ago. That's also who they are. Again, Kenyatta and Deputy Ruto have received the most votes at the polls. And again, Raila Odinga and his opposition party are challenging the results and election process in the courts. Odinga Tuesday called the repeat vote a sham, and he won't accept the outcome of what he calls a sham election.
This election must not stand. If allowed to stand, it will make a complete mockery of elections and might well be the end of the ballot as a means of instituting a government in Kenya.
The election board says the poll met constitutionally required standards. And presidential candidates, their agents, and observers have access to the servers and logs used in the repeat poll. Africa 54's Vincent McCoury is in Kenya.
What Mr. Odinga is saying basically is that he's forming a kind of an alternative to the existing government at the moment. And he's saying that NASA will now be pushing for the formation of what he called the Assembly of the People, People's Assembly, that will run Kenya until a legislative executive is elected and formed.
Any reaction so far from whatever quarters?
The truth is that there have been also others who are concerned about the future of this country. For example, a coalition of trade unions, civil society, academicians, faith-based organizations, people with disabilities and minorities under the umbrella We the People today said the October 26th rerun presidential election was a sham, and they have called President Kenyatta as lacking legitimacy. So it's not only Raila and his coalition that are concerned about the country's state and the future, but many more people, many
now,
more groups.
What is the general mood in the country?
Well, first, let me actually start by saying that we have seen violence, you've seen killings, but not once have you heard the president of the nation, Uhuru Kenyatta, or his deputy, acknowledge that dozens of civilians have been killed by the police, including children. There hasn't been a sympathetic statement from the government side. Now, people are wondering whether this is showing a sense of insensitivity to certain groups of people. Mm-hmm. Most people say there is need to have a conversation by all stakeholders. It is not about Raila Odinga. It is about so many Kenyans who feel that there is something wrong and there is a need to address some issues which make Kenyans feel excluded from the mainstream.
President-elect Uhuru Kenyatta is appealing for calm and says he'll accept the Supreme Court's rulings.
Let them first and foremost exhaust their constitutionally laid out processes. Let them go to court. Let them do whatever they want.
About 50 people have died in violence since Mr. Kenyatta was declared the winner of the August election. Also killed and tortured an election official just prior to the first vote. Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. For reaction to last week's Kenyan presidential poll, we are joined via Skype from Nairobi by my colleague, Vincent Macaulay, VOA's managing editor, Africa 54 Television News Program. Good evening, Vincent.
Good evening, Shaka.
How are you?
Well, I'm doing well. It's a bit hot here in Nairobi.
You actually look terrific. What is the mood like around you?
I have to say that even at this moment, there is still a sense of uncertainty about the future of this country. People are in a state of confusion as to exactly what Kenya will look like in the coming months. I mean, they are awaiting more further direction from the main opposition leader, Raila Odinga, for those who are his supporters and who buy into his kind of ideas. They are waiting to see what he wants to guide them into, what they should do come next week, come 2 weeks from now. But at the same time, of course, there are those who are wondering whether this presidency of Uhuru Kenyatta and Ruto will be challenged in the next 2 weeks in court. No one so far has gone to court to do that. So until all those things happen, the next 2-3 weeks are critical in knowing exactly where to go. So citizens, for sure, at this moment, are not so sure what's going to happen in the next few weeks.
Why particularly are they not too sure when you and I know there was an event that occurred last week on Thursday, and it is very, very clear as to who actually won that context?
Well, not everybody agrees that Mr. Uhuru Kenyatta won the contest, in as much as the Electoral Board, Electoral Commission declared him the winner. There are millions of other Kenyans who think that this election was a sham. It's not just Raila Odinga who's saying that. And therefore, even as he goes forward, whatever happens, whether he is, in fact, finally sworn in as the president, he will have to remember that there are many, many people across this nation who do not recognize this election, do not recognize his election as president, who believe the system was flawed, who believe the election should not have happened, who believe the conditions on the ground did not render this election free, fair, and credible, and therefore do not really take his presidency seriously.
Let's talk about the numbers of those who actually turned out to vote. The IEBC says that we are looking at the neighborhood of 38%, somewhere around there. But in fact, there's other sources of information which seem to be, in fact, impeccable, suggesting that the turnout, in fact, may have well been about 30, perhaps 35%. So we're actually looking at about 20% of the Kenyan registered voters. What is the truth about this, really?
That particular arithmetic has become an enigma in this electioneering and process and the electoral process in Kenya, because nobody seems to be very clear about the exact number who turned out for this particular election. And this is the reason. Remember, the opposition boycotted this election, and therefore in most places the agents of the major parties were missing. And there is talk that there is a possibility, because of the lack of other agents at many of the polling stations, there was an opportunity to manipulate those numbers, and particularly in the areas that are the stronghold of Mr. Uhuru Kenyatta or the Jubilee coalition. And therefore, there is no way of verifying that numbers were not inflated, in as much as, of course, the IBC is saying now it's opening its servers so that everybody can observe and see who actually was registered and who voted. But still, people say there are so many indications that there was some manipulation of numbers. There was some stuffing that went on, especially in areas where the only people at the polling centers were those of the Jubilee coalition. But at the same time, remember that those who believe that the IEBC had people inside there were more sympathetic to Jubilee than to the other parties.
What about the optics, Vicente? Because it seems to me, frankly, that pictures probably do not lie that much. Because let's face it, we could see optics, for example, in Gatundu, where President Kenyatta, in fact, comes from. We could see Kiambu. We could also see, of course, places like Nyeri, where there were so many people. What about that? Who should we, in fact, believe here? Because there was a president here in the United States called Ronald Reagan, and he once said, trust but verify. Should we, in fact, trust the IEBC on these numbers?
Many people have doubts about the IEBC. Remember, the chairman himself had said that he did not think he was in a position to guarantee a credible election. Now, if you go by his words, one wonders at what point did he then realize he could deliver a credible election. He did not come back to say, well, quite a number of things have changed since I made that statement, and therefore we can guarantee those numbers. But as far as the voters that were being seen, if you talk about the optics, yes, of course, the strongholds of the Jubilee coalition, especially in the Central Province region, there were so many people that turned up. There were even people who were taken from hospitals in Nyeri and other places to go and vote. So there's no dispute about the numbers that were there in Gatundu, in Nyeri, particularly in Central Province. But if you go even into some of the Jubilee strongholds in the Rift Valley, it was starkly clear that the numbers were way less than, say, the last election. In the main, in the very strongholds of the Jubilee, right in the Rift Valley, or in some other parts of this country. So, of course, there were those who turned up for this election in particular parts of the country. But there are also other parts of this country where the turnout was extremely low, and you could see from the lines at the polling stations. Voting was so simple. In so many of these places, you're just breezing through because you would see officials actually waiting to have somebody come to vote. So, I mean, there's no, you can't lie about the optics. Where there were people, we did see those people. But where there were no people, or there were very few people, it was also apparent.
What about the election or the event of August the 8th? We are told, of course, that about 80% of the registered voters, came out to vote, and they probably did. But do we really know who they voted for? Because let's face it, up to now, unless, of course, you have other information, the servers of that particular election have not been opened. And why have they, in fact, been opened? Because, let's face it, if, in fact, we think that we could probably find the winner in that particular server, a lot of people are saying that that winner probably couldn't be Uhuru Kenyatta, because if it was Mr. Kenyatta, that server would have been opened yesterday.
And that is why many people kept questioning, why is it that the Jubilee coalition didn't have a problem with the IEBC, even when the Supreme Court thought there were problems, especially with the way the results were transmitted? Why was it that on that side of the political aisle, no one thought there was a necessity to open the servers at that time and look through, verify those numbers? So I don't have a way to confirm that anything nefarious happened. Truth is, there's so many people who have questions about what really happened on August the 8th. And there's those who use especially the turnout this time around to say, how can you explain that 79-point-something percent, about 80% of the people came out to vote, and this time around you have such a lukewarm turnout of about 38%. What was the explanation in between August the 8th and October 26th? That leaves many people with questions that will never be answered unless, of course, everybody comes out clean and provides all the data, opens up all the servers from August and also, of course, those of October 26th, which they say are now open to be perused and scrutinized.
I never, of course, attended the NLO school, Vicente, but frankly, it looks like, someone could probably charge the IEBC with contempt of court right there.
You know, in August election was nullified because on one account, actually, the Supreme Court kind of found the IEBC to be in contempt of court because they were supposed to have opened up the servers for scrutiny, but they were hesitant to do that. And therefore, there are some who see the IEBC as having been in contempt. And even now, there are some who wonder how it is that the IEBC got away with what happened in August the 8th, because there are things that should have happened, and especially the opposition says those are the same reasons why they boycotted the elections, because there were things that could have been changed, could have been looked into carefully in order to make sure they are fixed before the next election.
You have covered many Kenyan elections before, and you have also covered elections elsewhere around Africa and probably around the globe. How do you assess this particular round of election? Have you ever seen anything like this before?
I think this is the first one. This is the first one, especially in Africa, where we kind of, I have to say, it is the first one in a country like Kenya, which is supposed to be a democratic country with functioning institutions, or presumed to be functioning institutions. Of course, it would be a different situation if it is in a country where we don't have a semblance of the democracy that we believe exists in this country. So this is a real first one, I think, in this part of the world, especially in a country that has a real strong constitution and functioning institutions. To see systems failing and to see people having no faith in this kind of new dispensation since the new constitution was promulgated, it is a very confusing and disturbing development.
What about the hotel where you are staying, Vincent? As you interact to people, staff, and of course guests, what kind of mood do you read among them?
You know, most people are saddened by the fact that this election especially exposed the negative forces of ethnicity, especially seeing that everything has been cast into this tribe or that tribe. Some people are looking at the opposition from the prism of Raila Odinga as a Luo and his Luo followers, without looking at the bigger picture of the issues. Or some others on the other side may be seeing Uhuru Kenyatta in terms of being Kikuyu and of course, Ruto being a Kalenjin. But again, this is being brought about by the fact that for once, people are really understanding that the politics of this country have been organized around ethnic arithmetic. It is all about numbers, arrangement between two big tribes, and of course, hoping you get a few smaller tribes to join you. And people are saying, when will this end, where all Kenyans, whether you're a Dorobo, you're a Kisi Matoke man, or you're from the Kuria country, or you're from Somalia, the Somalia community, can feel equal as a citizen in this country, instead of always wondering about how which big tribe to associate with in order to benefit from, the government that is in power in any particular year. So that has been the situation here. The mood has been informed by the things that have been witnessed in the last few months, the negative forces of ethnicity, and especially being manipulated by politicians to meet their particular selfish ends.
Final question, Vincent. You raised, of course, what a lot of people would say is the elephant in the room, the ethnic, the tribal concept. But frankly, what about others who say, wait a minute, there are 44 ethnic communities in Kenya. And if you look at what appears to have been the boycott or reflections, of course, of a very low turnout vote, but at the end of the day, it probably looks like it was, in fact, about two ethnic community elite. We're talking about the elite of the Kikuyu and the elite of the Kalenjin vis-a-vis the rest of Kenya. What about that? That is not really about Kikuyu, about Kalenjin and Luo.
Well, at the end of the day, you know, in this country, people have been following individuals, and these individuals happen to come from particular communities. And some of this majorly, the communities that have been in power, or those who have had the significance in the opposition, are the big communities. So here you're talking about the Kikuyu, the Kalenjin. There have been in the past an arrangement between the bigger communities of the Luo and Kalenjin, if you remember 2007. And therefore, the disturbing thing at the moment is, when will a country like Kenya stop organizing its politics and especially the strategy for leadership around the ethnic numbers, where small communities can also be part of the leadership class of this country? Otherwise, it will always be revolving around not just the Kikuyu and the Kalenjin, but it could be the Luo and the Luhya and the Kamba. But how about the smaller communities? That is the debate that people want to hear taking place, where all Kenyans can be seen as equal and also having a shot at leadership at any level of government.
On that note, Vincent, thank you so much for your insight. And please, please take care of yourself.
Thank you, Shaka. Appreciate it. Have a good one.
You're most welcome. Joining us here in the VOA studio is our distinguished guest, Luce Amina Chavez, co-founder and team leader, Inspiring Hope Group, a Kenyan community-based organization, and Wanjiku Hansen, a Kenyan film producer, who joins us via Skype from Hurst, Texas. Ladies, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you for having us.
You're most welcome. Thank you very much, of course, Wanjiki. Well, later in the program, we'll give you, our audience, a chance to call in with your question or comment. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately. Lucy, you obviously have had the interaction between Vincent and I. You also saw a clip about your country. Your immediate reaction?
I would say it's a defining moment for Kenya. I think we have hit rock bottom and we have to figure out how to get out from there. It has to stop being our person, but be going back to we, the people of Kenya. We have hit rock bottom because of so many things, and I think one of them being that the referee in such an important part in life of the country is not seen as trustworthy. And the referee here, I mean, is IEBC.
IEBC?
Yes.
Do you think from what you have heard and from what you have seen that particular referee, the institution, carried out the task or the orders, in fact, given to them by the Kenyan Supreme Court on September 1st, that they must carry out an election that was credible, transparent, free, fair, and verifiable?
I think they carried out an election, but that they carried out an election that was free, fair, and verifiable is quite questionable due to the fact that they seemed to be giving mixed messages. And so at times they appear like they are not quite sure of where they stand. So beginning with their own household, they didn't have things together. And coming back to giving people the information that is required, it seemed like they were not aware of what is going on. That's the kind of picture I got, because at one point, the chairman gives some information about those who have come out to vote, the pictures that you see on the ground just show you that there's a lot of, there's a lot of disparity between the numbers that he says have come and what you can actually see. At some point, the KIEMS kits that are supposed to be helpful in terms of identifying those who come to vote seem to be, at one point, one of the deputy commissioners said, they're not working, and so that caused a lot of uproar. Like, it costs a lot of money, so why are they not working now? And then later on, they give figures, and so there's a lot of back and forth about what they're doing and do they understand what they're doing, and it confuses a lot of Kenyans.
And this, of course, is not the first time that that had happened. I was not really a mathematician back in school. But what about the fact that the chairman of the IEBC, Wafula Chebukati, could actually come up with percentages rather than the numbers first? Are you supposed to derive numbers out of percentages or the other way around?
I would imagine being an ordinary Kenyan myself, I would imagine that you would need to say the numbers first and then from the numbers determine the percentage. It's not the percentage that determines the number that comes out, but rather the number that determines what percentage actually came out. And so by doing that, he kind of confused the people and also made himself look like he's not really sure of what he's doing or, not very competent in the work that he has been given. Like, and it was very important for the Kenyans for him to be strong and sure of what he is supposed to do.
Interesting. Let's go to Wanjiku. Good afternoon, Wanjiku in Texas.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Terrific. It's really a pleasure to see you via Skype. What about you?
Yep.
What about you? What is your initial reaction? You've seen, of course, the report, you've had the report, you've listened to your friend right here, Lucy. You also listened to an interaction between Vincent and me. What is your reaction about the recent presidential repeat poll?
Well, first of all, looking back to the elections that happened in August, I think at that time, the emotions were already running so high, and I've had so many people say that Kenya is a country of the few, but I disagree with that, because if you're born in Kenya, then you are a Kenyan, irregardless of where your ancestors come from, because that's what you call home. So when the second elections happened, I think people were so fed up with the whole issue of it became such a tribal divide to where only few people did an election and the rest were left out, which in my opinion is very unfair, because Kenya is not supposed to be ruled by a particular group of people. Kenya is supposed to be a country where everybody who was born there and everybody who's invited and welcome to come and stay in Kenya is supposed to feel comfortable. It's a place that I hold dear in my heart. And seeing what's happening with the repeat elections and the first elections, it leaves me thinking, what's happening with us? What's going on with us? And it's very sad that to feel that people are fighting for their lives and fighting to stay safe. And the people who are involved, who say that they are fighting for the ordinary mwananchis, majority of them, I believe, don't even have their families in Kenya. So, and I was speaking with a friend of mine earlier, and I told her, if you can easily walk at night without fearing the police, then you shouldn't call yourself ordinary mwananchi. And please don't get me wrong. The ordinary mwananchi is the person who struggles or who fights for their life every single day to bring food back home to their family, to earn a living. Not those ones who've had their money passed on to them from their forefathers. And it's very sad that they're the people who, unfortunately, are our leaders. And we do respect them. However, they also need to realize that the people who are so-called ordinary wananchis are the ones who are putting them in power to fight for us. And yet we're the ones who still end up arguing and fighting with each other because we have been reduced to you're a Kikuyu, you're a Luo, you're a Kisi, you're a so-and-so, you know, and it's very unfortunate. So what happens to the family is that the father is Luo and the mother is Kisi, or the father is Luo and the mother is Kikuyu. So what happens to those families? Have we as Kenyans thought about that? Have we as Kenyans thought about the repercussions of burning down our own houses? Have we thought about that? No, we have not, because we are looking towards somebody who's our leader and we are claiming that person as our own. You know, I don't even know where to stand because my dad is Kikuyu, my mom is Kisi. So it's really sad and unfortunate that we have come down to a country of tribe.
It means, of course, that you are a Kenyan, and even beyond that, in fact, that you are an African. First of all,
yes.
Your name happens to be Wanjiku, which in fact is synonymous with the constitution of Kenya. Are you proud of Wanjiku, the constitution of Kenya, and how it has really been implemented by some politicians?
Proud of being a Kenyan? Absolutely. Proud of the way the constitution is being used? Absolutely not. No. Because, look, I always give these examples, and I give these examples to my children as well. I tell them, I am your mother. I will not play favorite. I am your mother. If I have to punish you for being on the wrong, then I will punish your brother as well, because you knew what you were doing. And of course, one led the other, irregardless of you know, who's older than the other. And the constitution is just that. It's the playbook that's supposed to fight for all of Kenyans. So who is fighting for all of Kenyans if we're not going to follow what's in the constitution? Who's fighting for the lady that sells the vegetables, Mama Mboga? Who's fighting for Mama Mboga? So when they go and fight over there and I cannot leave the perimeters of my home, how am I supposed to feed my children, you know? We are supposed to follow the constitution. The constitution was created for a reason, not just for the people in power, for everybody trickling down to the unborn child at this minute and time in Kenya.
What about the fact that reports frankly suggest that perhaps in the neighborhood of 70% of the Kenyan registered voters did not show up to vote? Does this mean that President Kenyatta, Uhuru Kenyatta, has the mandate? Does he really command the confidence of the majority of Kenyans in order to rule? Or should we, in fact, go for some kind of political negotiations here?
I believe it's gone to a point where there has to be a solution. And I believe, yes, Ndugusha, political negotiation at this point in time, it is possible, and it should be on the table, because you know, the first time you drink your glass of water, you're like, oh my goodness, that feels amazing. The second time you drink it, you're like, the third time you're like, why am I doing this? It's the same thing that has boiled down from Kenyans. The first time I even voted, I was very excited. And now if I'm being told to repeat something and repeat it another time, it gets to a point where you're tired. You want to move on with your life. And I believe that they should negotiate. They should negotiate because the two leaders are holding Kenyans hostage to where we're at the mercy of whatever happens, you know, to my relatives who are back home. And it's not just the fact that they are the ones who are being affected. I'm being affected too. You know, even from Hearst, Texas, I'm being affected. Because if I need something done back home, they have to figure out, okay, so how am I going to town? Will I get means to go to Nairobi? Will I do this? Will I do that? Will I be safe? Will I come back safely? You know, there's so many things that are in play. And Kenyans are not the only ones who are being affected. Kenyans in the diaspora.
I'm afraid we are getting some problems, Wanjiku. We're getting some problems. Let's go to my colleague, Heidi Fitzpatrick. Welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. it's time to bring in our social media reporter, Aida Adams Fitzpatrick. Take it away, Aida.
Thank you very much, Shaka. As usual, the social media feedback has been excellent this week. Kenya's President Uhuru Kenyatta, as we now know, has won over 90% of the votes counted so far from last Thursday's rerun election. That's according to a local media tally of numbers released at the constituency level by the Election Commission. And so this leads us to our question of the week, which asked, do you feel the majority of Kenyans will be satisfied with the outcome of the second election and why? So let's start with a tweet from Elinas Peter, who tweets, I believe those who went out to vote were satisfied, contrary to those who didn't. Above all, they both exercised their constitutional right. We have another one from Godfrey Upanu, who tweets, I highly doubt it because it's the same commission that led to a nullification of the result. What competency have they acquired in 1 month? Now to our social media comment of the week from Facebook fan Jean Ogola, who writes, Raila Odinga's presidential ambitions are over for now. Uhuru Kenyatta is the president-elect and he will be sworn in on the 14th of November, most likely. That is the easier part. The more difficult thing is uniting this great nation and curing the scars of divisive campaigns. Kenyatta's first priority should be to sit down with a wide spectrum of Kenyans, including Raila Odinga and other NASA leaders. We must reason together on how to best drive this nation forward. Well, let's go to another comment from a Facebook fan, Monday Joseph, who writes, less than 40% voted, meaning more than 60% are for Odinga. Where are the 9 million who voted for Uhuru? A clear indication of the first rigged election. So the majority are dissatisfied and Uhuru is embarrassed. And our last Facebook comment comes from Kotoera Wodlango Nyekobalekare, who writes, a lot of irregularities were involved in that election. By not showing up to vote, the majority proved to the world that Kenyans need a change of leadership. So a reminder, of course, that we appreciate every bit of audience feedback. If you are a new fan, do drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. And to comment on our Facebook page, just enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. And to join our YouTube channel, sign up to VOA TV to Africa. And don't be shy to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, or simply go to VOA's Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website. And to watch us live on your mobile device, download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's ahead for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, Liberia's Supreme Court has ordered a halt to preparations for next week's election runoff amid allegations of fraud in the first round. Former footballer Senator George Weah was due to face off with Vice President Joseph Boakai on November 7th. Now a losing candidate is challenging the first round results, accusing President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf of interference. As the race for Liberia's presidency takes a dramatic turn, what's next for the West African nation? We'll take a closer look on the next Straight Talk Africa. And that is all for today's social media segment, Shaka. That, of course, gives you and the guests a lot to discuss, so I'm going to hand it right back to you.
Well, thanks, Heidi, of course, for sharing with us some social media reaction. And welcome back. And today's topic is a conversation about the reaction to last week's Kenyan presidential repeat elections. Our distinguished guests are Lucy Amina Chavez, co-founder and team leader, Inspiring Hope Group, a Kenyan-based community-based organization, and Wanjiku Hansen, a Kenyan film producer who joins us from Hurst, Texas. Well, ladies, again, I have to say frankly that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa for the first time.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Now, you heard, obviously, what Heidi had, shared with us from social media reaction from Africa. Your comment?
My comment. I think it is very important for the leaders to have dialogue, because when people see their leaders having dialogue, they will dialogue with each other.
But dialogue about what? For example, Raila Odinga says that he will only consider dialogue with Uhuru Kenyatta if they are talking about the next repeat election within 90 days. Deputy President William Ruto has already shot down that there are never going to be any other repeat elections. So what are they going to talk about? Talk about Nusu Mkati, just like they did back in 2008? What should they actually talk about? What needs to be addressed here, sincerely?
What needs to be addressed is the electoral body. It needs to be addressed. That goes without saying. That they have made Kenyans feel lied to is without question. But a stalemate might not really help Kenya at the moment. So if they have to talk, they have to maybe talk about Kenya and ask themselves, where do they want this country next? If it is deemed that an election in 90 days will save Kenya, then that is what they need to talk about. But I think talking about the electoral body and how they carried out the election will be very, very important, because that is where most Kenyans are hurting, because they feel like they trusted this commission, but somehow they feel shortchanged. If they are not, if they leave any space for doubt, then many Kenyans will not know whether to believe the results that are coming in or what the opposition is saying. And so the referee, the buck stops with the referee at the moment. You had a mandate to carry out. Did you carry it out in such a way that that you left no place for doubt? At the moment, I think they left a lot of space for doubt. And that is going to haunt a lot of Kenyans if it is not addressed. So I think that is one place I would start. Has the IEBC done its job so well that it cannot be critiqued at any level? Or if somebody else tried to, they would fail because they have actually done what they were mandated to do. Then once they have solved that out, then we can have a way forward. But as it is, it's going to be very difficult. Like you say, what are they really going to talk about? So that means that at the moment, we are at a crossroad.
What about some people who actually said that the Kenyan Supreme Court may have come up with a landmark ruling, but that this ruling really had teeth that did not bite, that could not bite, that actually they should be held responsible because they expected an IEBC, electoral group that conducted a sham election on August 8th to turn around suddenly and actually make good on what they were supposed to do. You know, there is a saying that comes from a very, very intelligent man. He probably was a genius in his time, and that is Albert Einstein. He once said that if you continue doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results, that is insanity. Isn't this really political insanity that the Supreme Court expected from the IEBC, headed by Wafula Chebukati?
I think the Supreme Court made a landmark ruling for Kenyans. And many Kenyans, you know, in the country or abroad, many Kenyans were surprised, but well surprised, that there was an institution that seemed to be working.
Right.
It was also a test for them whether what they have ruled will actually be taken into account. And they gave a prescription. It's like you go to a doctor and the doctor gives a prescription.
Right.
Whether the patient takes the prescription or not, the doctor has to wait and see. And I think there are things that the court can do. And I think one of the issues that has come up is that the servers that were supposed to be open were never open, and that leaves a big question mark. So in that regard, what can the Supreme Court of Kenya do, because the IEBC was in contempt of court? What can they do to gain back the confidence of the people? And I think at this point, many Kenyans are questioning, can the High Court help us again? Can the IEBC help us? It's a tough situation where many Kenyans will feel lost, because who do we go to for answers? I think at one point after the election and during the hearing and after the ruling of the court, many people in Kenya felt confidence that, we have one institution that seems to be working.
Yes.
We never had this before. It was a breath of fresh air. But that fresh air quickly faded away, in my view, and they need to come back and redeem themselves. If IEBC was in contempt of court for not opening the servers for the first election, then they should demand that that is made known to the public. And then from there on, see how to clean up this house rather than sweep things under the rug. Otherwise, we still have a very difficult situation in our hands, and we need to really, as Kenyans, figure out how do we move from this? Because I feel like this is a time when Kenya needs to decide, shall we stand or shall we fall? And the decision we make at this moment will be very, very important. It's not going to be easy by any chance. Just like your questions are very hard, I don't think I can come up with an answer like, what will the NASA and Jubilee talk about when they meet?
What should be the agenda?
What should be the agenda? That's a very difficult thing to answer when both sides have a hardline stance. But do they have a reason? I think my reason would be, why is NASA demanding that there should be election for 90 days? Why does Jubilee feel like we cannot hold any other talks about elections? And when we answer the why, then probably we will get to what and how.
Unfortunately, it looks like we are experiencing some technical difficulties with Wanjiku from Texas. And, of course, I appeal to the audience to bear with us. And as soon as, of course, we take care of that, Wanjiku will be right back, you know, on the show. Now, what about the fact that, of course, as you said, Dr. Rosalind Akombe, she is, of course, one of those commissioners of IEBC that pretty much ran away, really. Someone could say defected, but defected to her. To who? She actually ran away because of her life. She talks about, yes, how the Supreme Court ordered that, for example, the server be opened, and that the commissioners gave instructions to Ewan Ezra Chiroba, the CEO of the Secretariat. He ignored it. And he is the man who is credited, in fact, for perhaps having been at the center of what some have called creative accounting, which resulted, frankly, in election results that did not reflect the will of the people, but rather the will of the people who actually either count the vote or who have the opportunity to sit around and figure out what to do with the figures. So when you think about that, how could this election of October 26th proceed? Unless, of course, the IEBC is controlled by some invisible force from somewhere else. Has it proven to you, frankly, that it is an independent body, the IEBC? Or is it, in fact, as some critics have suggested, that, in fact, should be renamed Jubilee Electoral Boundaries Commission?
I think IEBC is to blame for the criticism it's receiving, because it's very obvious that there are divisions within the body itself, within the commission. What Dr. Roslyn said, I think, should have made them step back and analyze or do investigations and try to convince Kenyans that we're trying to work on the differences, we're trying to make things work for you. I think the CEO, Ezra Chiloba, is an unfortunate case.
Taking leave for 3 weeks.
He's taking leave for 3 weeks, but he is in obvious contempt of court. If he actually refused to open the server, then he knows that he's doing an injustice to Kenyans who want the truth. I think the most important thing for many Kenyans is that they want the truth. And if someone tells them the truth and says, look, this is how it was and this is how it happened, and if you want to see the servers for the August 8th elections, then this is it. But now it's taken so long. From that time, the court asked them and they refused. The first question that pops into your mind is, why would you refuse? If this then would calm down the tensions, then I think the onus was upon them to actually open it so that people can see that they're being transparent. Because if you have nothing to hide, the thing I like about the truth is that you don't need to pimp the truth,
no,
per se. You just need to say it as it is.
In fact, someone once said that if you are talking the truth, you do not need to think.
You don't need to. I think so.
Let's go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good afternoon, Kazim from Canada. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Yeah, good afternoon, Shaka. How are you?
I am terrific. How are you today?
Yeah, sure. I would like to make just a few comments.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's very pathetic to see African people going through this kind of agony. Yeah, because the constitution is dead. I don't see a reason why a president would like to stay in power for so long. When an election is being held, they will now use some kind of perpetrated kind of law or constitution to stay in there for forever. I think it is high time for Africans, especially in fact, all the old Africans, to try as much as possible to put the laws in their own hands. Where are we gonna bring ourselves out of this cage? This same thing is happening in my country, in Nigeria. It's happening everywhere. We don't want to die. We can't face them, because by the time we start to face the government, some set of people who call themselves militants, who are letting money for the government, they're going to attack the people. So I think, in a nutshell, we need recolonization. Yes, I am telling you.
Wait a minute. Hello? You mean Africa needs recolonization because it has had some mediocre leaders? There are some people that could actually lead their countries on the continent, but they don't have an opportunity to do so.
No, what I'm saying, recolonization, is that, you see, let me start an example. You see, a country like my country, before I talk about Kenya, I have to talk about my country. Do you understand? So in the era of election, I think we are okay in that area. You don't tend to, you can't come and tell us or try to perpetrate election for us because of the population. That one is there. You can't do that. But in the area of corruption, in the area of manipulation, in the area of some other things, these are the areas where Africans are finding difficult. And the bedrock of every country economy lies in their people. Do you understand? So if
where do you come from? Where do you come from on the continent?
I come from Nigeria.
So you are an ogre pata pata.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Exactly. Exactly. So, everybody tries to judge or they try to look for humility by the time their perpetrators done is something very bad. When they try to manipulate some of their House member, the honorable, they sign some laws to cover their perpetration, what they have already perpetrated. So we citizens, we ordinary civilians, we cannot do anything.
Thank you very much, Kazim. But I think with all your faults and what have you, the last time I checked, Nigerians have not allowed anybody to rule them for more than 10 years at a go since independence. Correct?
Yeah, of course.
Yes. What about Texas? Do we have Wanjiku?
Yeah.
Wanjiku, you're back. I'm sorry, really, what happened to you. What is your reaction to, I don't know whether you heard, of course, your friend Lucy here. You suggested initially the issue of dialogue between President Uhuru Kenyatta, Raila Odinga, and other probably stakeholders. What kind of dialogue? Because Odinga wants to negotiate what he calls a presidential repeat election within 90 days. And the deputy president, William Ruto, has shut down and said there will never be another election. What are they going to talk about? Nusu Mukati? Not Nusu Mukati, because you know what happened in 2008.
Well, if I was to be given, okay, let me give you, for instance, if I'm in the middle of a desert and somebody comes with Nusu Mukati and offers it to me, I will take it. Because at this point in time, I don't think either of the two want to give up what it is that they have. The opposition leader, Honorable Raila, doesn't want to give up the fact that he feels slighted. And Honorable Uhuru, on the other hand, feels that he doesn't want to give up the presidency because he believes that he won. So, irregardless of whatever it is that the two feel towards each other, I believe that Nusu Mukati is actually a possibility, because at the end of the day, and what's said and done, Kenyans are the ones who are suffering. Kenyans are the ones who are not moving forward, like I mentioned earlier, because they are being held hostage. And it's not like the two leaders cannot lead together. They can, because they did show us in 2007, 2008, you know, that was when they did come to a resolution, and Honorable Raila was given the prime ministership, probably not what he wanted. But at this point in time, is there really choosing? Is there a way that Kenyans can just say, okay, enough, let's move forward? Because if you do another election, that means Kenyans will have to wait for another 90 days to see if there is going to be an actual president. And who says that at that time that they are going to have a president? What if a repeat of what happened last week happens again?
Good. So, Wanjiku, time unfortunately is not our best ally, but you will probably be reminded that in 2008, facts yes. will show that Mwai Kibaki did not win that election. He ended up being yes. president. Raila Odinga won that election and he got yes. Nusu Mukati. Do you really think that it is about Raila Odinga or the people who actually support him, the Kenyan people?
Yes. Well, I still believe there's room for dialogue, because if they wait for 90 days, I have this nagging feeling that the same thing that's happening right now is going to happen 90 days from now. Because as Lucy mentioned, it's not really the two presidential candidates that have an issue, as opposed to IEBC. If the channel that we're using to get free and fair elections isn't working, then we really aren't getting to the root of the problem. We're just going around in circles. So we fix IEBC, and then we find a way to get free and fair elections, because we can't have that, because the system that we're using is I'm trying to get water and the tap is not working.
Thank you. Unfortunately, again, time is not our best ally, Wanjiku. On that note, thanks to our two distinguished guests, Luce Amina Chavez and Wanjiku Hansen. Thanks to yes. our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Kenya. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.